Why listen to the past when you can listen to the future? Welcome to the Think Future podcast, broadcasting from deep in the heart of Silicon Valley, California. We focus on innovation, startups, and the future, not necessarily those and not necessarily in that order. Here's your host.
Okay, so let's do this. So Lisa, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I have a company called Generations Now, and we are a sales and marketing agency for senior care companies. Mm-hmm. We're based in Oakland. We launched in 2016. We do three things really well: brand marketing, sales training, and recruitment marketing, which is a new field for us.
Recruitment marketing, what does that mean in this context of seniors?
There is a large need to recruit caregivers and health workers for the small subset of seniors that need extra care.
Mm-hmm. And where do you normally...
And the demand is very high. So it's a local business, right? So you can't recruit in Tennessee for workers in Nevada.
Right. So it has to be hands-on. You can't do something like... There's no working from home when it comes to something like this.
Oh, no. Exactly. So we recruit people on Instagram and Facebook, Messenger, everything where we can interrupt people where they are and try to grab their attention.
Right. And what are you finding is the most challenging aspect of that? Let's talk about the recruiting first.
The pay scales are challenging, mm-hmm. because on the demand side, there's a huge demand for workers, but there's a lot of wage inelasticity, because wages are to a degree controlled by Medicare reimbursements. And as we know, Medicare reimbursements don't really grow much.
Right.
On the supply side, we have a lot of care workers, increasingly men, mm-hmm. Many born in foreign countries who use this as a stepping stone in the United States. And they need to be thoroughly background checked. For most part, they need to have citizenship to enter this part of the economy.
Right. So are you saying that they... When you say a stepping stone, is that a stepping stone to a different career or a stepping stone to something else in care? Or
It can be a stepping stone to other things in care. So caregiving can be a stepping stone to becoming a certified nursing assistant, mm-hmm. And then going into the healthcare economy.
Very cool.
It's
Which
also
is, of course,
a way
in
for
huge demand. Huge demand.
Exactly.
Sorry, go ahead. Didn't mean to cut you off.
That's all right. So we're having a lot of success with recruitment marketing. It's a new area for us. I think it is a function of the economy. As long as the demand for workers stays strong, this will continue to grow. I think senior care is recession resistant. Mm-hmm. It's not the type of purchase like a cosmetic or new furniture where people can put it off for the future.
Right. And are you finding that generationally, because it's quite a large generation is now moving into that space now, is that that's where the demand is just going to continue to increase? I mean, it may taper off in a number of years, but for now it's increasing and it will continue to increase.
Absolutely. But the type of care is different because boomers, who are the older segment of boomers, are just starting to need care. Again, I'm not saying all boomers need care. This is a small sub-segment that we're working with. And they want to do more things. They want to get out of the house. They need workers who are more educated on diversity, more tolerant of diversity. And so it requires a little bit of extra training, and the training is available. So... the dynamic is shifting from what it was for perhaps my parents' generation.
Mm-hmm. And what are you seeing is there like a huge demand for something that this market is sort of clamoring for that's not being addressed by anybody?
I think there's a huge opportunity for a company to specialize in LGBTQ senior care.
Mm-hmm. So just providing specifically for that marketplace, or?
Absolutely. I think it's a brand opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a caregiver training opportunity. We published a blog post almost 2 years ago about marketing to LGBTQ customers in senior care. It still gets the highest amount of traffic.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
On our website, because people can be afraid to hire other people to come into their house because there's a possibility those caregivers might carry stigma with them. Mm-hmm. That they've learned in other cultures or other places.
Oh, that's interesting. So it's not any particular different kind of care. It's just more tolerant care, or what exactly is the difference? Just more focused care?
More informed care, mm-hmm. more tolerant care, more compassionate care, more educated care.
Right.
And it's also companies putting out a welcome mat for those customers. There are ways to do that. There are ways, you know, to put visual signals out to the community that you are a welcome place for these customers.
Right, right. Okay, so that's on that. And what other pieces? You mentioned two other pieces that you were working with. Are you working with facilities, or I didn't quite catch that first part.
So we work a lot with home care agencies and healthcare agencies. Mm-hmm. When it comes to senior care facilities, this is a market that I think is going to have a huge change in the next 10 or 20 years, mm-hmm. because the 55 plus communities that we're all aware of, the kind of age segregated housing, people really don't want that right now.
Yeah, the whole Sun City thing that was invented. I forget exactly when it was invented, but I remember reading about it. But yeah, I mean, those kind of 55 plus communities, I mean, there's more of them, but are you saying that they're on a decline? Like people don't want that anymore, or?
They have a lot of vacancies.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of built infrastructure here.
Right.
Which is usually in the inexpensive part of town.
Right.
I think what I'm sensing now is that what the next generation of retirees wants is intergenerational, non-segregated housing.
Mm-hmm.
And more of a community kind of commune style, where something like there's a place in San Francisco called Star City,
mm-hmm.
and it's geared specifically towards millennials, but it has a communal kitchens, communal living area,
yeah.
and you have your own bedroom and your own bath, which is kind of a dormitory style.
Yeah. Yeah.
People will call it that. But everyone of every age wants community.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I know my son's a Gen Z. He likes that kind of environment. He wants to be in that kind of environment. I mean, he went to Coding House, which is that kind of environment, sort of like almost like a boarding school kind of thing.
Okay.
Where there's a lot of shared spaces and there's some private spaces. And you're saying that are seniors looking for that sort of type of space with other seniors? Or is it more of a – because I guess that's what – these homes are like now, but this is like,
yes.
Like you say, it's got to be intergenerational. So you've got to mix it all up.
Yes. Right. Well, the answer to both is yes. So mm-hmm. when we use the word seniors, that's a very, that's a heavy word, because when we call people seniors, we're otherizing them.
Yeah.
We're saying those people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just really people.
Yeah.
You know, whether you're in your 50s, your 60s, your 80s, there are more and more communities that are naturally occurring, and they have a name for them. Some of them are called villages,
mm-hmm.
and they can be also virtual. They can be just, you know, 30 people in our general neighborhood that
sure.
form their own village.
Yeah.
But this is happening, and the senior living industry is very, very slow to change because they're run by real estate developers for the most part.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know,
yeah, so
I mean,
there's plenty of innovation that can happen in that space. And I like the idea of the multi-generational sort of communal living. But, I mean, is everyone sort of bought into that? I mean, are the millennials and the Gen Zs just as interested in hanging out with the boomers and vice versa? I mean, I know that a lot of the older generations, they do like going to, like, this random fact I heard, is that they like going to move to college towns. So I guess that's probably so they can hang out with college students and just, you know, feel younger. I mean, is that part of what this is, or is this?
It's because people like to learn wherever they are, right? So you don't stop losing your desire to go out to coffee shops when you hit a certain number, right? You don't stop your desire to go to see a movie, to look in shop windows, to buy a fashionable dress, to go to a lecture. A lot of colleges are actually offering housing for older adults on their campus now.
Interesting.
Usually to their alumni.
Mm-hmm.
It's a new market for colleges as well. Yep. And now we are really going sideways on this. And that's great because colleges are seeing this is a market for people who appreciate perpetual learning.
Right. Right. Well, yeah. And plenty of times I'd love to go back to school and hang out and just expand my knowledge base. I mean, that's what I always figured I always do when I retired. Not really retire. It would be more of a, you know, just shifting my work and my learning into completely different areas. And that's what I figure I'd be doing. So that's really cool. So all, like I said, are all the parties then interested in that? I mean, are you getting a lot of millennials and Gen Zs signing up to join in that sort of commune environment as well?
You know, it doesn't really exist just yet, but people do live in apartment buildings that are not age segregated.
Right.
Now, this age segregation came about because decades ago, people fought for more rights for what were then called seniors at the time, and they wanted more affordable housing. So the federal government gave tax breaks to senior housing, which gave now, once you have a tax break in real estate development, that is going to people are going to build into that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So people built to the tax break, not to the demand.
Mm-hmm. So if there anything, like, let's say a startup wanted to get into the business of building these types of buildings, and like what makes them different or special based on other than, I mean, you mentioned apartment buildings that are already out there. How would you make these things different? Like
I would hire architects that employed what's called universal design.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a building. Safe interiors and exteriors that are good for someone who's 8 years old and good for someone who's 80 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to, you know, trip as you go into the bathtub that the 8 year old can open the door and it doesn't weigh 40 pounds.
Right.
In Europe, most bathrooms have a little pull cord where you can call for help if you fall. Mm-hmm. Right. You've seen those. Maybe when you were younger, you went to Europe. You're like, what is this? Should I pull it?
I think I pulled it a couple times in some places. I remember that. So it was like, it's almost like we're going back to the, I mean, isn't this how families used to live in farmhouses and stuff like that? That you'd have like multi-generational homes where everybody would live in it. And everybody would hang out with each other,
and
usually
family-based.
But.
Yes, we have this kind of idealized version of what families were like. Mm-hmm. But in the United States, there were also many families broken up by, you know, pioneers going out west.
Yeah.
So sons leaving with daughters and children and going out west. Families broken apart by enslavement and other discrimination factors. Yeah. So we have, I think, this idealized version of homes that, you know, had three or four generations in them. Interestingly enough, a lot of home buyers in California who come from Southeast Asia are demanding this.
Mm-hmm.
And some developers in California are building homes that have a main kitchen and a smaller kitchen,
right?
A living room and a smaller living room.
Right.
You know,
right.
So two or three generations can do their thing wherever they want.
Mm-hmm. That would be very expensive. I'm just thinking around here. It's crazy.
So I've heard that half the new homes built in California over 5,000 square feet are sold to overseas buyers.
Yeah. I would not be surprised. So there's a question is that, You know, you live in the Bay Area. I live in the Bay Area. Huge housing crunch, very expensive. It's very difficult for anybody to get into the market. What do you think is a what? Why aren't we innovating in that space? I mean, why aren't we
People
doing
are
something for that?
innovating, they're just not doing it here.
Well, give me an example of it. Where are people innovating, and why is it not happening here?
People are moving to Tennessee. People are moving to Austin.
So
People
they're
of
just
every
leaving.
generation are just leaving here. You have to be either very wealthy or very heavily subsidized to live in the Bay Area.
So is there any solution to keep people here? Because I'm assuming the government wants to keep people here because, they have tax revenues and all that other stuff. I mean, what kind of solutions could we provide to allow people to live here more comfortably?
Well, we could end local zoning of everything. We could end the ability of neighbors to block your new construction because they're going to have a reflection in their window or a shadow over their garden. You want to open that Pandora's box? Everyone who is not from California who is listening to your podcast is saying, "Thank God I don't live in California."
Well, they already say that sometimes whenever I talk about housing and traffic and stuff like that here,
Or $4 gasoline.
but exactly. And the commutes are terrible. I mean, you have people who are living in, reasonably sized homes, but they have to drive 2 hours to get to work. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. But
But the
so
idea that you can work from home actually is such a an interesting development that our grandparents didn't have.
that's right. That's
Right?
right.
20 years from now, you could still be doing your podcast from your house.
Absolutely. Well, I think that, see, one of the things that I think people don't see is like where the future of work is actually going. And I think what's happening is that almost every job is going to be Uberized, right? So that you'll be able to flip on and flip off and do your job from wherever, and your work will actually be integrated into your life. It's going to be almost like a task economy. So you're walking down the street, you're in a particular spot, suddenly your phone will buzz and say, "Hey, perform this task and earn $5." And it'll be something that's just nearby you. So I think work is going to break up into these little like atomic modules of things that you can do while you're just living your life. And I mean, that's a super few far future thing, but I think we're already seeing that sort of thing happening, especially with and I mean work is not that monolithic thing anymore, right? It's not a thing
That's
that
right.
you like do, because it's like everybody works almost like a little bit all the time, right? It's like I do a little work, I do an errand, I do a little work, I do this, and eventually that's up to what we used to do before, but it's definitely not the whole 9 to 5 8 hour work week. And I think that the housing has to kind of reflect that. Because it's so much is still stuck in that old model of I got to live over here, I got to work over here, and I got to commute from here to here. And there was a survey done of what people hate doing the most, and I think commuting was at the very bottom. It's like the absolute worst thing that people hate. So the more we can do to get rid of commuting, I think the better. And if we can possibly leverage, because if you think about the Bay Area, there's also lots of older folks who are in these homes and they've been there forever. I mean, is there any reason why so a startup could come up with an idea for people to like create this multi-generational thing within their homes, right? You have a 4-bedroom house that your kids are gone, so maybe you could like have some millennials live there for a while or something like that.
I
Maybe build
think
your own.
people have been doing that for years and just not reporting it on their tax returns. When I was a little girl, my piano teacher had a boarder from the local college living in her spare bedroom.
So it's all being done informally, but there's no like systemic way of doing it or something like that.
There are companies such as Silvernest out of Denver that match people with roommates who are both parties being over 50. And I believe they handle the transactions, the leases, the legal agreements, help people do interviews. So they help people room up together.
But they do that, but you say it's only for over 50s, so they don't
Yes.
mix up, they don't do anything for millennials or Gen Z. They don't bring them in as well.
I can't speak for them, but I think this is their target market. People who have home and people who need home who want to be with peers.
Interesting.
And I'm sure there is another company. There's another company out of Miami. I think it's called, I can't remember it now. A gentleman named Richard runs it. He identified a way for younger people in their 20s and 30s to move into an older person's house and exchange care hours and chore hours for rent.
Mm. That's a great idea.
Yeah, and it's very systematized. Yeah. It doesn't scale easily. It has to go market by market because these are local markets, right?
Yeah.
But there are definitely startups addressing this.
Okay.
And they're small today, but in 5 years they'll be huge. And I'll tell you, if the next recession comes, they will explode.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, you're already saying if that happened. I mean, like you said, did you say that isn't available here? That's in some other market. That's in Florida.
It's in the Southeast market. Yes.
It's in the Southeast market, because something like that is desperately required here, because we do have a lot of these people in their homes, and we have a lot of sort of kids out there just like not being able to move out because they have that same problem. There's no place for them to go. They just can't afford it.
So it's kind of forced intergenerational living.
Yeah, exactly.
So, okay, consider this. Before the advent of Social Security, most older parents lived with their adult children.
Mm-hmm.
These intergenerational households that we romanticize.
Yeah.
When Social Security was passed and elders started receiving a monthly stipend, one of the first big demographical shifts that happened was they all moved out of their kids' house because they wanted their own space.
And now we're back to them not wanting their own space because they're done. They're done with that.
Every family is different.
Oh man. So what else are you interested in? Like let's go a little broader. I mean, let's talk a little bit about the future. Where are you going? Where's your company going? What's happening next?
I'm publishing a book soon. It's called A Manifesto for Marketers in Senior Care.
Nice.
It's 10 calls to action for marketers to lead us into an age-positive future.
Beautiful. I love it.
This week, there was a big announcement in Advertising Week in New York City. That's a big advertising conference. Getty mm-hmm. Images teamed up with AARP to launch a catalog of age-positive stock photos.
Nice.
Which
That's
is a
great.
Huge issue because all the stock photos, 7 out of 10 stock photos of older adults show them either sitting by themselves, sitting by themselves with their partner, or sitting by themselves with their healthcare worker.
Oh my God. That's terrible.
So now you have Getty Images with these age-positive images of older adults actually just living their lives, doing mm-hmm. their thing, going mm-hmm. shopping, painting, exercising, like all the things normal people do instead of sitting home with
right.
their healthcare worker.
Right.
Brad Pitt is on the cover of GQ, mm-hmm. right? He's mm-hmm. not a child anymore.
Nope.
There was an article last month in the New York Times about zaddies, which are like hot daddies.
Seriously?
Yeah, and Refinery 29, which is an online fashion magazine, had a huge series of articles about women who are mature and have been around the block a few times and portraying them positively
nice.
In fashion magazines. And all of these companies are responding to this huge demographic shift and recognizing, quite frankly, the buying power of this population.
Finally. Finally, yeah. I'm so sick and tired of the opposite. No, you're absolutely right. I'm so glad to see that this is finally starting to happen. But I mean, it's still going to be some doing to actually push that thing forward, because there's still this sort of stigma, especially in the job market or something like that. When you're talking about, ageism, especially here in the Bay Area, is terrible and blatant. And obvious. I think I wrote it once that I was actually at an event once where a VC was up there, and it was Ron Conway who said this. He said, "I will not invest in anyone over the age of 35.
But most startups
He said it to 1,000 people.
But how many successful startups are started by people over 40?
Very few. I mean, most of them. I thought you were going to say under 20, but yeah, under 35. Most of the most successful startups are 40 and up. right?
Yes, they
but
are.
there's this glorification of the, you know, Zuckerberg style
it's the bro
entrepreneur,
culture. Yeah.
Which is ridiculous because,
Well,
you know, I almost want to start a VC which just focuses on, you know, older entrepreneurs. But I'm worried I'm never going to be able to raise any funds for it because there's a
there's a group called 70 over 70.
What's that?
There's a group called 70 over 70.
70 over 70, really?
Which is for entrepreneurs who've started their first company over 70.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
This is all happening, and it starts with marketing. And this is why I'm publishing this manifesto, because marketing leads the way.
Mm-hmm.
The images that we put out as marketers have a huge impact on the companies, the brands, and society as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think this is such an important issue. That's why I think this announcement by Getty Images is so important. When we see positive images, we have positive feelings. And
right.
It is starting and it is happening. And it's not happening fast enough, but there are a lot of people like myself with much bigger platforms who are just warriors against ageism.
Mm-hmm.
Fabulous book published this month by Louise Aronson called Elderhood.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Chip Conley of Joie de Vivre Hotels published a book on the same topic this past year. And then here's an inspiring book by Ashton Applewhite. It's called This Chair Rocks.
Yes, I have that book, and I went to a talk by her. She's awesome.
You see, you went to a talk, you went to a meetup, you're always learning. You're not waiting for your retirement to do your continuous learning.
Absolutely. I'm always learning. So what can we do? What can we do to help push this forward? I mean, just be honest about
we have
who
to
we
be,
are.
We,
I mean,
we
what's
we
the best way to do this?
All right. I can speak as a marketer.
Okay.
All right. We should not portray people as being submissive.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And there's a lot of that where the older person is sitting down and the younger person has their hand on their shoulder.
Yeah.
We should show images of what is possible for a joyous life. We should show more images of people, not furniture in
mm-hmm.
senior living facilities.
Mm-hmm.
We should take the same care with a photograph that my 25-year-old daughter takes on her Instagram.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Makeup, lighting, and wardrobe, right? We should stop shying away from diversity and interracial marriage and sex because older people have sex.
Yeah.
It's not like some taboo thing. We have to talk like real people, right? Mm-hmm. We can't talk like a bunch of real estate developers. We should market to people's aspirations, not their shortcomings.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, in marketing, this is a big deal because you'll hear a lot of, you know, appeal to people's pain points and blow up their pain points.
Exactly. That's what you hear from almost all the time everywhere.
Right. That's like internet marketing and direct response and sales letters and all that.
Yeah.
It's great for clicks, but brands don't do that.
Yeah.
People who want to build a brand focus on positive aspirations.
Right.
You'll never see an ad for Nike that's trying to, like, nudge you on your pain points.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's true. I mean, I was talking to a marketer the other day, and he goes, you know, your blog posts aren't pissing people off. And I'm like, why would I want to piss people off? It's like, why would I want to make people angry? You know, I'm a optimistic futurist. I think that things are going to get better. And, in fact, they're better than people say, and they're just going to get better. And we're all working together to make things better. So why would I, you know, want to focus on the negative aspects of things? I want to focus on the positive aspects of what we can do. And that's exactly what you're saying. And then, you know.
Optimism is so important. And it's actually one of the key motivators in how older consumers make decisions.
Right.
You know, optimism, authenticity, connection, legacy, living in the moment, wisdom, and simplifying. Those are the positive motivators we can appeal to instead of the pain.
Yeah.
And then another thing we can all carry out into the world is when we come across an older person who has some disadvantage, we have to stop from this natural reaction of, well, they've had a long life. It's their fault they are where they are.
Mm-hmm.
because there are a lot of social and economic factors that accumulate over people's lives, depending on what zip code they're born into.
No, you're absolutely right.
It's leading with empathy and compassion.
So do you think we've gotten to the point, because I know this is one of the things I've done, is that I don't tell people how old I am, right? I don't tell people how old I am because I'm worried about the negative connotations of what they will get when they hear how old I am, right? I'm just like, I'm leave it vague on purpose because I'm concerned about someone saying, oh, that he's too old. He can't be involved in this, blah, blah, blah. Have we gotten to the point yet where it's going to be okay to reveal that kind of stuff? Or are we still far behind that and it's still something that you need to hide?
I don't think we should go through life trying to seek acceptance from much younger people in a popularity contest. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of internalized ageism. Mm-hmm. That we've grown up with. And if we can own who we are and say, yes, I'm 55. Mm-hmm. I have gray hair. Mm-hmm. I can't bench press 120 pounds anymore. But my creative, you can't beat it.
Right.
Right? The creative that come out of our agency can't be beat.
Right. So that's great if you're marketing to that generation. But what if you're looking for a job? What if you're in your mid-50s and you're out of work and you're looking for something? I mean, what's the best way to move forward on that?
I think I'm not someone to give advice to someone who's looking for a job in their 50s, okay? But since you asked, I will indulge you. If you're in the Bay Area and you're working for – want to work for a company that has their eye on technology, you have to know the technology, mm-hmm. right? So you can't just go out there and say, I know Microsoft Office. You know, it's got to be that and a whole bunch of other things because these are the tools we have.
Yeah.
Right. Like no one needs to know how to put the carbon in the paper anymore. Right. it's just a new set of tools. You have to master the tools.
Yeah.
Right. The other thing is you have a ton of experience, but you need to go into that job only highlighting the experience that's relevant for that job. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Don't make your resume sound like you could run the whole company.
Yeah.
Because if you could run the whole company, you'd have your own company, right?
That's right. And the terminology is very important. It's very important. You know, and the length of your resume too. I mean, you could have, if you're in your 50s and you have any kind of career, your resume could be like 20 pages long.
Does it need to be though? Like, is that what's relevant to the job you're applying
exactly.
to?
Exactly. And how far back do you go? I mean, do you go back 20 years because you have 20 years experience? Do you go back 30 years because you have 30 years experience?
I would just pick out what's relevant to the job you're applying for, write your resume specifically for that job.
Yeah.
And that's it.
But do you reveal your age? In what you do? Do you try to hide it? I mean, obviously, I don't want to hide it, but would somebody who's
revealing
this...
it has been proven that revealing your age will work against you, so don't work against yourself.
Right. So we're still there, right? There's still a stigma attached to that.
We're still there. There's still a stigma attached to that. There's still a stigma attached to being a woman. Anyone who interviews both you and I for a job will offer you the job four times as many times as they'll offer the job.
Wow.
All right. There's still a huge stigma attached to being African-American in our society. Mm-hmm. There's huge stigma attached to being differently abled or in a wheelchair or using some kind of assistive device.
Right.
And so on and so forth, and ageism.
Well, where do you see ageism on that spectrum? It seems to be like really far down because, I mean, it's everything else is so visible. Like you can say when you talk about D&I, when I talk about two sort of HR departments within organizations and they talk about D&I, they don't talk about ageism at all. It's like not even on the list.
No.
So how do we get it on the list? How do we get it further up the list?
We talk about it.
Yeah.
We go to the book clubs, you know, we read the books, we carry the torch. Mm-hmm. We We offer jobs to other older people.
Right.
Right? I would posit that ageism is the first ism you personally may have experienced in your entire life.
Mm-hmm.
But for women and African-American older women, it's an intersection. Like I've dealt with sexism since the moment I took my first job on Wall Street.
Right.
And a partner at Morgan Stanley said women should not be in sales.
Right.
And it was like my first job out of college. And I was like, holy cow. And, that was a long time ago. Never stopped, right?
Mm-hmm.
There were no African Americans on the 51st floor of Morgan Stanley. I tell you that.
Yeah.
So we all have to bear it. And now you need to help us bear it too.
So let me ask you something. I mean, do you think this will get a lot better in the future where we're sort of disintermediating ourselves with devices? Or do you think that'll make it worse? It's like we're becoming, because it's like a lot of our interactions have been face-to-face over time.
Yes.
And now they're getting less and less face-to-face. There are, we're like you and I, we're talking, even though we're in the same general vicinity, we're talking over the internet, right? And more interactions are going to become more disintermediated like this. Do you think this is going to make things better or worse?
I think it's going to make things a lot better because you're looking for someone who can deliver what you need.
Right.
No matter where they live or no matter what they look like.
Right. Right.
Not you specifically, but one must guard against their unconscious bias.
Yeah.
But I think technology is a big part of the solution to people who want to work. Anyone who's over 60 who wants to work can go on Upwork and offer their services, whether it's editorial services, writing services, photography services.
Exactly. And that the bias doesn't exist there because there's no way to know if person X is whatever, unless they put their picture up there or actually admit it in their bio, whatever.
Yeah.
So you can purposely just leave those details out because, you want to be able to get jobs from anybody. So technology is definitely going to help there. So it's funny. So it's actually the more separated we are, the better things will work in these cases.
That's an interesting way to put it.
Well, I mean, it's all these virtual communities. It's kind of like when you're in a regular community, you're kind of stuck with everybody who happens to be physically around you, even if you're not really interested in the same things that they are. Whereas on the internet, you have these communities of interest that are far flung, and you can have, you can be with your tribe no matter where they are.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's what makes this so powerful. And anything that actually helps. See, because, I mean, my thing is that if everybody in the world had the ability to talk to everybody else in the world without any filter, then I think we'd all be much better off as humans. Because I think the biggest problem we all have is that we don't communicate directly to each other.
We don't communicate honestly, is what you're saying.
Yeah. And honestly, and there's always filters, right? Between individuals, there's not a lot of this people talking to each other honestly and authentically. It's more of a, I'm going to put up this facade for this group, and I'm going to put up that facade for that group. And, there's people have multiple Facebook facades and this facade and that facade. And it's just hard to get to authentic self. And maybe we're going to get to a turning point where people want to present their authentic selves online as opposed to, something that's all, filtered. And
this is an age-old problem, right? The man in the gray flannel suit, he wasn't his authentic self either.
Yeah. But I think we're getting to the point where people are more interested in seeing the authentic other person.
Yes, so, and you can find people to be authentic with online, even if you can't find those people in real life.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Most of the time you can. More online than you can in real life, that's for sure.
Microsoft has this beautiful new technology. It's like, I can't recall the name of it. It involves virtual reality headsets,
mm-hmm.
and you can go into a room,
mm-hmm.
a VR room with other people who share your interests and represent as your avatar.
Nice.
And even though you have this phony avatar, people are very, very real in these Microsoft VR societies.
Right. Right. It's why kids are always complaining whenever I do an avatar on any video game that I'm playing in. I always make it look like me. And he's like, why do you want it to look like you? But I like the way I look. I like the way I am. So why not make my avatar? I don't want to be like an elf or an eagle or anything like that. I just want to be, you know, a human.
Did you not play Dungeons and Dragons?
Oh, yeah, but I was always like the wizard or some other human character. Like in World of Warcraft, I was like a human warrior or something like that. And they're like, why don't you want to be an elf? Or why don't you want to be an orc or a tauren or something? I was like, no. I want to be a human. I'm like comfortable as a human. I don't know. Well, I think humans are great. And I think a lot of people worry about how AIs and other machines are going to take away jobs from humans. But I think humans, we still have a lot to contribute. And we're going to get into a point where, you know, there's a lot of futurists out there who say, oh, you know, all these jobs are going to be gone because AI is going to take over. There's going to be nothing else for us. But I'm like, no. We're just going to do something different. We're going to do something that's good for humans to do.
Change is a constant. Yeah. Right? No one in Ireland is knotting lace by hand anymore.
Exactly. Right? And if any of them are, you know, they're selling it for a hell of a lot of money. So.
Well, yes. Change is a constant. We're living longer, so we're seeing more change.
Yeah.
What a blessing.
And the other beautiful thing about technology is that it's also helping people, you know, no matter where they are in their lifespan, to be able to provide, you know, useful services to other people. Like you were saying with Upwork, you know, you could be 16, you could be 60, you could be 80, and it doesn't matter. I mean, you're providing these great, you know, whatever skills you have, you can monetize. So
right.
Awesome.
And the quality of our life is better. I mean, I run this agency and we all work virtually, even though we're local to the Bay Area for the most part.
Yeah.
You know, instead of going from Oakland to Berkeley to Marin.
Yeah.
We will just get on our Scott. We call it Skype coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And work together like this, because why spend the best half hour of the morning in the car?
Exactly. No, I'm with you 100%. Anything we do to improve the situation of commuting, like not having to commute, is absolutely spot on for me. In fact, I would say, like, if you're ever going to build a corporation today, it would have to be virtual. Just let everybody work from home, unless you absolutely have to put 3D printers out there, whatever you need to do. But that would be the way to do it. So what's next? What's happening next? So what do you see happening next?
Well,
some predictions for the future.
Oh, predictions. Okay. intergenerational senior living.
Mm-hmm.
People working far into their years.
Right.
And enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
And people will work because they need to as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think ageism will become a topic.
Mm-hmm.
Ageism has not yet had its Me Too moment.
Yep.
And that's coming.
Yep.
Just this morning, Facebook, there were several news articles about advertisers on Facebook who had discriminated against job applicants while advertising on Facebook by not including people over 55.
Interesting. Right?
So that was, you know, I saw that in three different news outlets this morning.
Mm.
So I don't want to say which ism is worse than the other. Obviously, there are some, you know, ageism does not have any violence attached to it the way other isms do. But it will have its moment, and it will be a societal movement.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what we want to see. I want to see.
There will be marches in Washington.
Exactly. Where are the marches in Washington? Well, I'll be there. Right. I'll definitely be there.
I'll be there too.
If you want to organize something, I'll be there. I'll totally be there.
I'll rent the bus.
So what do we want to do? If we want to help the cause, is there some organization, or is there a number of groups, or what do you suggest moving forward? Like, what are the next steps here? So if someone's been, like, you know, listening to this and going, yes, I'm excited, I want to help, what do we do?
Yeah, I got crickets going right here, right? Because there's no, like, mass movement. There's no You know, I mean, you
grassroots,
can join the silver,
grassroots.
You can join the Gray Panthers here in the Bay Area.
There's a Gray Panthers. I love
yes,
it.
There's a it's since the 70s. There's been a Gray Panthers in the Bay Area.
I've never even heard of it.
Organize a village for yourself and your friends, a virtual village.
Is there a place you can do that? Is there like a website or something like that?
I think there is, yes, something called Villages Online.
Okay.
Stay up to date with technology. If you want to be relevant in the job market, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Keep learning.
Oh, and yeah, I never expect to stop learning
and
my
take
entire
care
life.
Of your health. So health is wealth. And
yep.
I think personally, I don't expect the government to be taking care of me.
Yep.
And all of the indulgences and vices that accumulate over a year can really kick you in the butt in the later years.
Yeah.
Stay learning, stay really physically active.
Yeah.
You know, eat really good food.
Yeah.
Take care of yourself so you can take care of your family. That's always the way I feel about my life. You know, my life is all about, I want to take care of me so I can take care of the people I love.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. And let me know when that march is happening, because I'm there.
Right on.
Totally there.
Okay, Chris.
Well, thank you so much. I mean, is there anything else you want to add before we sign off? Or
I love talking to you. This is great. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you so much. This is great.